You've heard of Grammarly, and you might think it's a fancy spell check, but people on your team have been using it and loving it for years, because it does way more than you realise. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that works seamlessly across apps and websites and can write an instant first draft in a few clicks, not a few hours. When every word your team writes is clear, concise, and on brand, companies can save 19 days per employee per year. Learn what better writing can do for your company at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
From the heart of where innovation, money, and power collide, in Silicon Valley and beyond, this is Bloomberg Technology with Emily Chang.
I'm Emily Chang in San Francisco, and this is Bloomberg Technology. Coming up in the next hour, Binance is walking away from buying FTX after looking at its balance sheet. This after Bloomberg broke the news on the U.S. investigation into the FTX liquidity crisis. We're going to have coverage of the crypto blow-up throughout this show. Plus, 11,000 employees at Meta laid off as Mark Zuckerberg admits his metaverse vision was a mistake. We're going to dig in. And Reid Hoffman joins us to talk about the next decade of tech innovation and how big the future is for AI. Plus, Gary Tan is with us to talk about how he thinks tech in Silicon Valley survive a looming recession. But first, before we get a check of the markets, you may have read that this is my last week hosting Bloomberg Technology. Whew. After 12 years sitting right here, I'm going to be expanding our coverage with new shows focused on the most important people and issues at the heart of tech business and culture. I'm not going to cry. I'm going to try not to cry yet, but I might tomorrow, which is going to be my last day officially in this chair, so I don't want to linger now, but I do want you to know that every day has been special and there's so much more to come. Meantime, U.S. financial regulators are investigating whether FTX properly handled customer funds as Binance walks away from a deal to save Sam Bankman-Fried's exchange. Bloomberg's Katie Greifeld covers the markets with us. Katie, what just happened in the last 24 hours?
You know, almost as quickly as Binance said it was going to come to the rescue, it's already backing away from this deal. And it seems that there's two big concerns here. There's that big financial hole that Binance was looking into when it actually looked at FTX's financing. There's great reporting on the Bloomberg terminal breaking just in the last few minutes that Sam Bankman-Fried told investors that FTX was going to need a cash injection or it's going to file for bankruptcy. SBF told investors that the company faced a shortfall of up to $8 billion. That is quite the hole that we're talking about. The other side is, what is going on with the customer funds? Another Bloomberg News exclusive today, breaking the news that U.S. regulators are looking at that issue, whether FTX improperly handled customer funds. You look at the statement that Binance put out, it seems that both of those issues were top of mind when they were considering whether to actually go through with this takeover.
Katie, Brian Armstrong, the CEO of Coinbase, called into the show yesterday to talk about his take on the deal. And we asked whether Coinbase had thought about acquiring FTX. Take a listen to what he said.
I had a number of conversations with people over the last 24 hours. And there's reasons why that would not make sense. And I'm not quite at liberty to share the details right now. I think I'm going to let other people share that if and when they're ready, or it'll probably all come out eventually.
Some foreshadowing there, maybe. What should we be looking out for going forward?
I think the big question among many big questions is what actually happens to FTX users right now. And also in that interview, which I was tuned into, that was a great get. I mean, Brian Armstrong also made the point that if the deal does fall through, then FTX customers would face losses. And that's what's at stake here. Because if you think back all the way to yesterday, we got a tweet from SBF saying that all assets will be covered one-to-one. This is one of the main reasons why we've asked Binance to come in. So without Binance there to provide liquidity for those massive withdrawals that FTX is facing, it's unclear what happens here to those actual customers.
All right, Bloomberg's Katie Greifeld, another one we're going to continue to watch every twist and turn. Thank you for that update. Meantime, Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg saying the company will cut more than 11,000 jobs. This is the first major round of layoffs in the social media giant's history. For more, I want to bring in Bloomberg's Alex Barinka. Alex, 11,000 is a lot of people. Where are the, what departments are these people coming from, and how were these decisions made?
Emily, no team was spared here. Mark Zuckerberg told the organization this morning that every single app, Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp would be affected, as well as their metaverse efforts, which sit in Reality Labs. But there are two that I want to point out that seem to have been hit the hardest. That is recruiting, as they also have a hiring freeze still in effect, and some of their business teams will be restructured. Now, in a memo that went out to employees that was reviewed by us here at Bloomberg, existing employees who are staying, it was said that the highest levels of leadership actually made these decisions, and most managers didn't actually find out about it until this morning of who would be staying on their team and who would actually be departing amongst those 11,000 employees.
Let's talk about Mark Zuckerberg's words here and what he took accountability for. I believe he even used the word sorry. He said, I want to take accountability for these decisions and how we got here. I know this is tough for everyone, and I'm especially sorry to those impacted. How much further did he go in terms of talking about the big metaverse pivot?
Yeah, he said, frankly, he got it wrong. Not so much about the metaverse pivot, but the bet they're making right now that this big shift to online shopping and spending more time online that we saw during COVID would continue. They staffed up to be ready for that. And not only is that bet kind of flailing here, Emily, to your point, they have this massive bet on the metaverse they're now spending too. So a really tough time for them. The shares are down 70% this year, even with that little pop that we saw today. And maybe some questions for where Mark Zuckerberg is guiding both the social media part of the business and this new bet, this decade-long bet that we'll all spend more time potentially in virtual reality in the metaverse.
What's the mood like inside Facebook right now? My sources are telling me that seemed a little random in terms of how the decisions were made. Folks weren't necessarily consulted. They found out early this morning. You know, how are folks feeling?
Yeah, it's pretty gloomy, Emily. If you can imagine, you know, it's hit or miss in terms of who is staying on teams. Also, you know, we're hearing that this restructuring could take some time. So what the company would look like, that's not, you know, written in stone as of today. On the back of the Twitter news on their big layoff a week ago and tacking on these additional 11,000 jobs, that's about 15,000 people in social media that are out of a job in the last week. So not only is it gloomy on the inside, but if you spent any time on LinkedIn today, you see folks looking for new prospects, and you've got to think it's a tough world if you're a social media expert in terms of who might hire you once you're out the door at Meta.
All right, Bloomberg's Alex Barinka, thank you so much for that update. We'll continue to watch your reporting on this. Meantime, earlier today, President Biden said Elon Musk's ties to other countries are worth looking at, though he declined to say if he felt Elon Musk has been doing anything inappropriate. We're going to talk a little bit more about Twitter later in the show. Reid Hoffman will be joining us to talk about that and much more. With the wave of tech layoffs, including now Meta, what does this all mean for the Silicon Valley ecosystems, from startups to the world of venture capital? I want to bring in Gary Tan now for more on this. He is the founder of Initialize Capital and the incoming chief of the very popular startup accelerator, Y Combinator. Gary, thank you so much for joining us. As you know, it's a special week for me and for the show. And, you know, so much has changed since I started covering Silicon Valley. And I'm just wondering where you were 12 years ago when Bloomberg Tech launched.
Oh, gosh, I was a software engineer working on my startup, Posterous, which was a YC company. I hadn't even become a partner at YC yet. In 2008, we actually closed our $700,000 seed round the day Lehman died. So, you know, for people who are watching right now who might be affected, you know, I really do feel for you because, you know, this type of day, it's such a shock. But, you know, also 2008, 2009 was such an incredible time to start companies and, you know, that you have to take the good with the bad.
11,000 people laid off at Meta alone today. How bad does this get in your view?
You know, I really feel for those families. I feel for every single person who is going through, you know, that type, that magnitude of layoff. But one of the things that I'm sort of excited about that, you know, there is a silver lining in that these are really smart, really dedicated people. You know, Facebook has an incredible hiring bar. And I think about a lot of human capital, a lot of human heart and minds that now can be applied to, frankly, all of these other problems that, you know, are sort of facing society and humanity. And, you know, I'm excited about what gets unlocked here because, you know, for for practically, I don't know, 3-5 years, the number one thing that, frankly, startups really faced was how do we find people who are as smart as, you know, a Facebook engineer or almost any of those roles. And so, you know, on the one hand, this is a sad day. On the other hand, you know, I'm kind of excited to see where all of these people are going to go. And some of those people are going to start new companies that actually become the next Facebook, the next Meta. And, you know, I think that that is something that I'm excited to see.
There are some people saying Silicon Valley is turning into a wasteland, that San Francisco is over. And they were saying this, you know, before these layoffs even started to happen as a result of the changes from the pandemic alone. I know you're very steeped in the culture of San Francisco, and I'm guessing you disagree, but what do you think?
Yeah, I think San Francisco, from time immemorial, was a place for dreamers and doers to come and try to, you know, try their hand at their own future. But, you know, there's something very special about technology in San Francisco, which is we've, you know, brought together some of the smartest minds, and then they go on to create products and services for a billion people. And, you know, we might have gone through a big wave over the last decade, but there's a new wave. You know, I keep meeting new, you know, 25-year-olds, 30-year-olds, like, you know, people who are sort of just starting their career. And some of them might be sort of leaving some of these tech giants, and we're realizing that, hey, we can start a company, we can create a product or service, and it comes from actually solving real problems for customers, right? And so, you know, whether it's crypto or, you know, SaaS software, sort of across the board, you know, even though this is a time of sort of destruction, there is creation that is growing out of, you know, sort of the ground from, you know, the wreckage of some of these, you know, quite regrettable situations right now. You know, the seed is in there and it's growing. And we are going to hear about the next, you know, Meta, the next billion-dollar or decacorn company that is sort of starting exactly like, you know, a startup like my startup started the day Lehman died.
So what does this actually mean for early companies right now and for investors like yourself at the earliest stages? How do you make decisions about where to put your money and whether to put money in anything at all, given the way the economy is going?
Yeah, I think the very special thing about early stage is that, you know, you are starting from small numbers. You know, a startup, as Paul Graham wrote in his famous essay, a startup equals growth. And when you're small, you can outrun any macro situation. You know, the macro situation might be the heights of 2021 when we were starting to tell people, hey, you know, beware, there might be, you know, recession ahead. And, you know, that was something that we started seeing towards the end of last year. You know, or we might be all the way down on a day like this, where I think all of us are sort of trying to figure out, like, what does this mean and how much lower does it go? But in that time or this time, there is the ability for a small team to build a product or service and grow 2x, 4x, 10x per year. And so even if the macro situation goes down 20, 30, 40% from here, like if an individual company can show that it can grow 3x, 5x, 10x, you know, 100x over several years, like that will outrun, you know, the worst, you know, even a Great Depression, if you can do it. And the thing is, this is impelled by technology. You know, there are new problems, and, you know, things like generative AI right now are just blowing people's minds. And, you know, I think that the fruit of the next great companies, it really comes from that technology and from the builders who are being unlocked right now.
Well, speaking of building and disrupting, Elon Musk taking over Twitter, you're a Twitter power user. I'm curious what you think of what he's done so far and what the plan seems to be. And maybe if, as a power user, you have any advice for Elon Musk.
That's a great question. I mean, I love Twitter. And, you know, I think the number one thing is I'm also feeling for my friends over there who are, you know, sort of sleeping under their desks, you know, working through it. So all I can say is, you know, take care of your people and, you know, take care of, you know, us as users. And, you know, I know that he's much maligned by certain people right now, but, you know, I'm rooting for them. I'm rooting for Twitter as a company and as a user.
I spoke with Representative Ro Khanna earlier. You're going to hear part of that conversation in a moment. But he called for more regulation of big tech, which may be more unlikely depending on how the votes shake out. I know you're heading to the White House next week with one of your portfolio companies. What do you think the role of Washington should be in the next generation of tech innovation and perhaps not repeating some of the mistakes or lack of action that we've seen in the past?
Yeah. So I'm headed to DC with Beeper. It's one of our initialized companies that's creating a universal chat app. And one of the things they really want to do is sort of take away the green bubble, blue bubble problem. And that, you know, that's just kind of a silly example in one sense, but it is actually emblematic of a much bigger problem. And those are things that we hope to solve with the Innovation and Choice Act Online and the Open App Markets Act, which, frankly, we really hope Senator Schumer will actually bring to the floor. You know, he's claimed that the votes aren't there, but we're pretty sure there are more than enough votes. And, you know, for me, when I look at early stage, it's really about making sure there's a fair and level playing field. And it's really clear to me that we don't have that right now. Apple and Google certainly mean well, but they're still looking out for their main interests. And we want choice and freedom. And we need to protect the ability of founders, you know, perhaps in a garage in San Francisco, in Mountain View, wherever they are in the world, even. We want them to be able to create something that touches a billion people. And, you know, that's really what we want with these two bills. We want a fair and open dialogue and a way for consumers to actually win.
I have a minute left, Gary, and I'd love to get your advice now. For the folks who were let go today, what would you say to them?
I mean, go home and hug your kids if you got them. But at the same time, you know, maybe if you've been playing it safe, like this whole time in your career, it might be time to go out and find, you know, some frontier tech, something that you're interested in, and, you know, research the startups, research what you think might change the world. And, you know, you don't have to, you know, take a job offer, but interview at a bunch of them and figure out, you know, is there a fit? Is this place right for me? And, you know, building equity and helping build new things that have never existed before, it is the most exhilarating experience that I've ever had professionally. And I just really hope, you know, I think that it's just a hard moment right now. And, you know, the future is a little bit uncertain in terms of, you know, whether there's a recession or not. You know, the macro picture doesn't look that great, but I just want people to remember that there new technology is still being built, and there are companies big and small that are still, you know, fighting that fight, and, you know, they need your help. So, you know, dust yourself off and, you know, we're going to go build the future.
Build indeed. Gary Tan, thank you so much for joining us and sharing all of that on a hard day. And of course, we're also excited about your next chapter too, founder and partner at Initialize Capital, and of course, incoming head of Y Combinator.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, thank you. My discussion with California Representative Ro Khanna about the outcome of the midterms and Elon Musk. His thoughts next. This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Back to the midterms and what impact it'll have on the future of big tech regulation in Congress. Representative Ro Khanna was with us earlier. Take a listen.
Well, first, just on a human level, I'm saddened and concerned about the layoffs. I, as you know, represent the district in the Bay Area, and so many of those people and their families are in my district. But more broadly, we're going to need more investment in content moderation that respects the First Amendment, but that is not allowing speech that incites violence or that is spreading blatant conspiracies and lies just to get more attention. And that's something that Congress needs to regulate. We haven't, and we need to regulate on privacy. But otherwise, those social media platforms are spewing often real poison into our democratic discourse.
You've got a new label on your Twitter profile identifying you as a U.S. representative. Some accounts are already being labeled official. What's your opinion on the approach Elon Musk is taking at Twitter so far and the difference between the right to free speech and the right to amplification of free speech?
Well, look, I know Elon Musk and I will give him the same advice privately as I do publicly, which is he shouldn't be running Twitter, just like Jeff Bezos doesn't run the Washington Post and people who own CNN don't run CNN. And Michael Bloomberg doesn't sit there running Bloomberg Television. I think he should appoint an independent board of people who will make the day-to-day decisions. Some of the ideas of getting rid of bots, those are good ideas. I mean, the bots are responsible for some of the worst algorithmic amplification. But I don't think Elon wants to be sitting there making a decision about which tweet should be on and which tweet should be off.
Full interview with Representative Khanna at Bloomberg.com. And of course, we'd like to know Mike Bloomberg is the founder and majority owner of Bloomberg LP and the parent company of Bloomberg News. Welcome back to Bloomberg Technology. I'm Emily Chang in San Francisco. Computers are now creating never-before-seen images in seconds. Think apps like DALL-E or Crayon. It's called generative artificial intelligence, and Silicon Valley investors are betting big on the future of this emerging technology. Reid Hoffman is one of them. The LinkedIn co-founder and partner at Greylock Partners recently sold a collection of his own AI art for charity, and he joins me now. And Reid, thank you so much for joining us. You've been such a huge part of this show for the last 12 years, and for that, I am very grateful. And I'm just so curious to hear your thoughts on what is going to define the next decade of innovation in technology. If it was networks for the last decade, is it AI for the next?
It is. I think actually as hot as it seems this year, even next year, it's even going to be hotter. I think the question about having essentially the equivalent of a professional aid, like Microsoft has this product called Copilot for engineers, I think that will be within 5 years present for every profession. It'll be for journalists, for VCs, you know, for, you know, just doctors, lawyers, the whole thing. And those tools will start and they will be central to how we've been doing it. And at Greylock, we've been investing this for years because we've seen this coming. You know, so we have Adept and Cresta and Snorkel. And of course, I co-founded Inflection with Mustafa. But I think this will be a trend of human amplification through these artificial intelligence technologies, which we've never seen its like before in human history.
The question is, how do we maintain the human? So for example, how do our everyday lives, our everyday working lives, intersect with the future of work and AI?
Well, this is one of the reasons when OpenAI launched DALL-E, I wrote this essay that was on LinkedIn, because the natural thing, the worry is that, oh, it'll take the jobs from graphic designers and like graphic designers will be out of work. And actually what I realized by having the time to play with it is that whatever your graphic skills were, between none, a little, a lot, it's an amplifier. Now, what you'll have to do is you'll have to learn it. It'll be like learning Adobe Photoshop or Figma. It's I need to now have this as part of my professional tool for how I'm operating. And that's what's going to be true for all of it. So there will be changes and it will be, you know, like transitions. You have to learn a new tool. And one of the things that, you know, when you're an older professional like me, learning a new tool can be a little stressful and challenging, but it's doable. And, you know, currently it goes by the geek name prompt engineering. Hopefully we'll have a better term than that. I mean, we're not so good at marketing and, you know, that kinds of communication, generally speaking, within the tech industry. But I think those tools will then amplify all of us. And I think that's actually what's coming across everything, you know, doctors and lawyers and graphic designers and coders and writers and journalists and research analysts and VCs.
Generative AI specifically is getting so much attention, and you've been talking about it for a long time. Just how big is this going to be and how much money is there to be made? Is this where the next Facebook or Google is going to come from?
Well, we certainly hope so. That's part of the reason why, you know, Greylock, we made all these investments and, you know, it's, you know, everything from Adept to Inflection and others. And, you know, what I think it is it'll be even more of an amplifier, I think, in terms of what you've seen from everything from Microsoft Office and the internet. I think that because when you think about, you take a LinkedIn definition of what the breadth of professional is, which is you can get better at your job and you kind of output some thinking and decisions and information. AI will be helpful across all of that. Now, there's a lot of work to go on to make it happen. It'll take years for adoption. It'll take, you know, kind of crafting it to make sure that it's the right kind of human application versus, you know, potentially, you know, destructive effects. But I'm fully optimistic on the human amplification part of it.
Let's talk about amplification. We've just gone through a midterm elections. You yourself have said that midterms often signify major turning points in American politics. And I'm curious what the turning point you think is that's happening now. We saw candidates who amplified the big lie get more engagement. We saw social media platforms then profit from that engagement. How dangerous could this get?
Well, it's super dangerous, which is one of the reasons why the protection of democracy is, I think, the most important thing. It's part of the reason why I've been engaging in a little bit of a, you know, kind of a of saying this is an important issue for business people on LinkedIn, because LinkedIn is kind of about business and kind of amplifying that. I do think the results of the midterms have been good. They've been generally bad for the election deniers, for the proponents of the big lie. It's generally been bad. Like it's generally a pro DeSantis, anti-Trump, you know, kind of spread within the Republican Party. I think it's maybe the best, you know, kind of result for a midterm result for a president in the last 20 years. So, you know, as normally it's really bad for the sitting president and their party, and the fact that it's actually the best in the last 20 years, I think is a positive endorsement of Biden. And I think the general view is to be like democracy matters. Peaceful transition of power matters, rule of law matters. And the fact that we have a democracy by which we vote for who our election representatives are, and we should not encourage insurrections or acts of violence like January 6th, that's bad. And all of us as Americans, all of us as leaders, all of us as business people need to firmly get behind it. And I think we're seeing that, you know, broadly through the elections. Obviously, there's this and that election, which are still have problems, but I think it's been a general good referendum in these midterms.
You and Elon Musk go way back, and I know you haven't commented publicly yet on his takeover of Twitter. So I have to ask, what do you think? What do you think of what he's done so far?
Well, Elon, which is no surprise, is one of the amazing entrepreneurs of our generation. I mean, revolutionizing multiple industries and doing so against people like me saying, I don't think it'll work. Like SpaceX, I think I was the second or third person he pitched to. And I was like, that's like a difficult atoms-based governed subsidy industry. And he revolutionized it and created a new one with satellites, revolutionized electric vehicles. So amazing entrepreneur, strong vision, you know, drives through brick walls or through multiple brick walls and all of these industries. Now, I wouldn't have handled Twitter at all the way he's doing it. I think the chaos of it, I think the suddenness of the layoffs and a bunch of other things, obviously I have a different kind of view on the politics of it. I disagree with his vote Republican. I would say vote anti-MAGA or anti-election denying. That would be the thing, I would say, and it's whether it's Democrat or Republican is, you know, relative to your specific race. And so I think, you know, I think he's got a hard challenge in front of him. I think we all want him to succeed. And I think that even though I wouldn't do Twitter the way he's doing it, you know, he's proven me wrong before by the kind of the sheer, you know, grit and determination and vision. And I always respect that about him. And I think we want a public square that's healthy, that has, you know, an emphasis on the human and anti-bot and everything else.
Where do you draw the line between the right to free speech and the right to the amplification of free speech? And I'm so curious if you've talked to him at all about this or any part of it and how he's responded.
So I haven't. So I don't have any inside information. I'm obviously, Elon's a friend. I'm always delighted to help if he were to call. But I think the key thing is look, there is a right to freedom of speech within the political arena, which is the government cannot quell you. And we do that so that we have an ability to not have our best ideas and anything that's quelled by the government or by political institutions in power. It's slightly different for business ecosystems and all the rest of this. And so the whole like overall freedom of speech is a little bit different between the business side, which is part of the reason why we have a clean, well-lit place in LinkedIn with a clear design for it and all the rest. And, you know, if you look at LinkedIn, you get part of how I think of these things should be designed, which is like, yes, you should maximize a bunch of kind of expression from individuals, but you should also think about the health of the group and the health of the ecosystem. And like, for example, let's take something slightly less charged than, you know, partisan issues, like vaccine deniers, you know, enormously bad for the health of a society, for the health of not just the country, but the world. And you go, okay, then, and there's clear medical expertise against that. Well, that should not be given reach. Someone should be able to come out and say, well, I think vaccines were invented by Martians and they're here to try to control us. Fine, be on your little soapbox, say that. But actually, in fact, the medical side of it is part of what allows our society to function successfully. It's part of flu vaccines and a bunch of other things proven through, you know, centuries of work. And so that kind of thing, you have to distinguish between freedom of speech and freedom of reach. And you do so with a very broad view of also the health of society, the health of the network in it. And I think that's, you have to do both. It's not just individuals. It's not just network and society. It's both. And you have to be good stewards of that.
So let's talk about the health of Silicon Valley. 11,000 people just laid off at Meta. Thousands of people laid off at Twitter. Hiring freezes at Apple and Alphabet. layoffs happening in a lot of places. You have seen so much of Silicon Valley history. How does the Valley survive this? What does it look like on the other side? And how bad does it get before we get there?
Well, I think it'll certainly continue bad for at least 6 months, you know, could go, you know, a year plus. The Valley's gone through multiple recessions. Actually, in fact, some contractions, just like what makes business efficient, is good for refocusing, you know, for kind of saying, look, this is what our business is fundamentally about. This is how we do it. I think it's a good thing. Obviously painful for families and this kind of changes. On the other hand, I think Silicon Valley will continue to thrive. There's a lot of capital investing in the future. I think a lot of these folks will be able to find other jobs reasonably soon, because I think there's still lots of companies being created. Greylock, we've been investing in them, not just AI companies, but also enterprise companies, security companies, a whole range of approaches, and other venture firms are also doing the same. And so I think it's the ability to go and still create the future is still there. And it's one of the things that I think Silicon Valley has gone through multiple recessions. And it's a crucible. It's like a tempering function, because you need to also be efficient and effective and not just, oh, everything always works. It's like, no, you have to be like, how is this good for your customers? How is this good for employees? How is this good for society? And be focused on doing a few things and doing a few things well. And I think that's the period we're going through. But I think that's, while as painful as it is, a downturn is just another phase of business as usual.
So it sounds like you are long San Francisco, long Silicon Valley, which is what I expected. Reid, always appreciate you joining us and your optimism. Reid Hoffman, Greylock partner, founder of LinkedIn, thank you. All right, coming up, Kraken's Jesse Powell talks about the importance of having reserves in the wake of the latest crypto blow up. He joins us next. This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice, or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
We're seeing this in real time. How this is unfolding is in real time, but we saw it in the spring as well, in real time, that investors are getting hurt. Lack of disclosure, opacity. We've seen the use of other people's money and trading ahead and using other people's money, but we've also seen the use of leverage.
SEC Chair Gary Gensler there in the wake of crypto turmoil, cryptocurrencies tumbling after Binance backed out of the FTX acquisition. CEO Changpeng Zhao saying Binance will start sharing proof of reserves to garner trust within the crypto community. Now the U.S. is investigating FTX. Jesse Powell is the co-founder and outgoing CEO of the crypto exchange Kraken, which has been transparent about proof of reserves. Jesse, what just happened? It was happening and suddenly now it's not.
Yeah. So it seems like there was a deal between two of the largest exchanges, Binance, to acquire what might remain of FTX, which from the outside looks like mostly a pretty big crater. You know, and I think they took a look at it and just decided this was a hole too big to fill, you know, with too much kind of radioactive regulatory scrutiny around it, which looks like it might have been a pretty big headache to deal with. So unfortunately, right now, it looks like FTX might be heading into a bankruptcy process, the likes of which, you know, we've seen frequently recently, unfortunately. And, you know, for some like the clients of Voyager, you know, you might be aware that FTX was just appointed the sort of trustee to manage the Voyager payout process, who acquired those accounts. You know, so it's history repeating itself here with crypto. I mean, we saw a similar situation with Mt. Gox back in 2014. When another trustee had deposited funds from Bitcoinica into Mt. Gox, which subsequently got hacked and clients got a double penalty there, still waiting 10 years later to be paid out. So hopefully it doesn't take that long here. But yeah, unfortunately, another black eye on the industry, and it's going to be really tough times for the consumers and the clients of that exchange.
I asked Coinbase CEO Brian Armstrong the same thing I'm going to ask you. Would Kraken be interested in buying FTX?
Yeah, I'm sure they have some assets that are interesting, that have some value. You know, we've already got quite a bit of the same infrastructure. You know, there's a lot of redundancy between exchanges. So, you know, maybe we're talking about user accounts. Maybe they have some subsidiaries that do specific things we'd be interested in, or possibly some licenses. But, you know, I don't think there's going to be value there anything close to what the hole seems to be. So, you know, I think the process is likely going to go into bankruptcy. You know, there's going to be an organized maybe auction for these assets. At this point, you know, I'm not sure whether they even would be allowed to sell these assets, you know, which might belong to the creditors at this point.
Has FTX approached Kraken at all?
We have spoken to them about this, and you know, we're in the loop, and you know, we're looking to get more information at this point.
Okay. Does Kraken, do you have any exposure to FTX or Alameda, and if so, how much?
No, we don't. You know, we steered clear of the FTT token. You know, we haven't lent them any money. We don't trade FTT on the spot exchange or the futures exchange. So we're in the clear on this one, fortunately. You know, we're a very conservative business in terms of our operations. You know, we don't operate a hedge fund on the side. There are no, you know, strange relationships like that. We're not trading with clients' funds. We're not lending out clients' funds, you know, and they don't know about it. So we're a relatively conservative business. You know, we've been around for 11 plus years. So, you know, I think... people should really look at this space, you know, when they're looking at a new venue to trade at, you know, look at that history, look at whether they've done something like proof of reserves, you know, which Kraken has done twice in the last year. Look at their longevity in the space. You know, I think the bear market is really the tide going out, and you see who's swimming naked when that happens. And some of these newer venues, they're seeing their first bear market for the first time, and they're, you know, getting called out, and it's become very apparent, you know, who's swimming naked.
So who is swimming naked? Are crypto funds next? Hedge funds, for example?
You know, there's a lot of leverage out there. I don't think we've seen the end of it. I think there could still be some other, you know, quote unquote liquidity crises to come. You know, I think that's a euphemism for, you know, sort of an insolvency. I think that you know, people are marking some of these really illiquid assets like FTT, for example, which are highly centrally owned and controlled. They're marking at them, you know, 100% value, you know, when the reality is maybe they should be marked at, you know, 10, 20% of the value, because the market is so thin. You couldn't sell all that if you had to, you know, it's heavily centralized in the control. So there's an extreme risk here. You know, and what we saw in this case with Binance and FTX was that Binance, a competitor of FTX, owned a huge supply of this token that FTX was using as collateral to borrow against. And when that asset started declining in value, you know, I'm sure they started getting margin calls, and you know, it turns out that they just didn't have the money, you know, I think to make good on those loans.
All right. Well, the situation continuing to unfold. Really appreciate you joining us to share your perspective on it. Kraken co-founder, outgoing CEO, Jesse Powell. Thank you. Some other stories we're following in China. The world's largest iPhone factory will still face some tough COVID restrictions. The city of Zhengzhou ended a lockdown in the district where the plant is located, but some areas are still considered high risk, including one where the Foxconn factory is. The restrictions have led Apple to warn it'll ship fewer iPhones than anticipated. In the U.S., the likelihood of a prolonged housing slowdown is rippling through the industry. Redfin is shutting down its home flipping business and laying off more than 860 workers. That's about 13% of the staff. Since the end of April, the company has reduced its workforce by 27%. Here's what CEO Glenn Kelman told me back in August about that first wave of layoffs back then.
We laid off 6% of our workforce, and I'm the one accountable for that. I feel so ashamed about it. I was so blue. I still am. But it's what we had to do to run a profitable business. And now I think we feel more optimistic about the future, but we're still running on a knife's edge.
And Tesla CEO Elon Musk sold more than $3.9 billion worth of shares in the electric car maker just days after closing his buyout of Twitter. He's now unloaded about $36 billion worth of shares in the company in the last year. According to Gene Munster of Loop Ventures, quote, he's preparing for Twitter to be a money hole. And that does it for this edition of Bloomberg Technology. Thursday, we've got a very special lineup. AMD CEO Lisa Su will be joining us. Aileen Lee and Jenny Lefcourt, some of the most prolific venture capitalist. It's going to be a very special show for me, and I'm going to try my best to get through it. And I hope you all will watch. Thank you so much for tuning into this edition of Bloomberg Technology. I'm Emily Chang in San Francisco. This is Bloomberg.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcast.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV+.